Thank you for listening to this recording of Family Bible Church's Sunday morning message. We pray that God will use this word to bless and encourage you.
During the Advent season this year, we're going to be looking at the names of this child. And so if you would turn with me to Isaiah chapter 9, we're going to begin by reading the first so many verses, seven verses of Isaiah 9. And then we're going to look at, if you've got a sermon note sheet, you'll see that. You'll have the concept, the plan as we go out. We're going to be looking at these four names of this child who is to be born. And then beyond that, we'll go back. I'll explain toward the end of the message as well. We'll go back and look at the previous prophecy, and then we'll look at a future prophecy coming out of it where the names of this child are going to be proclaimed. But if you don't mind, stand back up one more time for the reading of God's word. I'll read the first seven verses of chapter 9. Isaiah 9. Nevertheless, the gloom will not be upon her who is distressed, as when at first he lightly esteemed the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward more heavily oppressed her, by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan in the Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. You have multiplied the nation and increased its joy. They rejoice before you according to the joy of the harvest, as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For you have broken the yoke of his burden and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor as in the day of Midian. For every warrior's sandal from the noisy battle and the garments rolled in blood will be used for burning and fuel of fire. Of the increase of his government and the peace there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and over his kingdom to order it and to establish it. Did I skip? Yes, I did. For unto us a child is born. I just realized like this is like what I'm preaching on. I just skipped right over it. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end, upon the throne of David and over his kingdom to order it and establish it, with judgment and justice from that time forward, even forever. The zeal of Yahweh of hosts will perform this. You may be seated. So as we got done studying the book of Zechariah, and then last week Haggai, Chuck led us in a study of Haggai, clearly the incarnation of Yahweh wasn't a secret, or it shouldn't have been a secret, that God had declared it, Yahweh had declared it himself, that he would come in the flesh. The passages that we're going to look at today and then over this next so many weeks just intensifies this revelation of God. That, again, it wasn't a mystery. It shouldn't have been a mystery that God put so many clues, so many statements in his word of what he was going to do. So today, we're going to begin talking about his name shall be called, and then we're going to today talk about the first one, Wonderful Counselor. But before we get into talking about the Wonderful Counselor, I want to do a little aside, first of all, in what is in a name, because this is very important when we read then, his name shall be called. So what? Many people want to allegorize this, and they want to spiritualize this, and they want to set it off. But in the Hebrew mind, in the Jewish mind, in the Jewish thought process, a name was given to reflect the individual's position, their personality, or potentiality. So go all the way back. Who was the first person? Adam. Adam. What does that mean? Man. God created what? Man. And he called him man. Does it make sense? And so who was the one who named the second person? Adam, man, named the second person. Now, she wasn't called woman. She was referred to as woman, right? Because she was taken out of man. But then she was given a what? A name. What was her name? Eve. Because, why? Say again? Mother of every living thing, right? So that she was going to be the mother of all living things. So there was a reason why people were called what they were called. Noah. His name actually is Noach. Do you remember? Since I got a Noah, what does Noach mean? That's Asa. Don't look at him. What's your name mean, Noach? I know, we don't call you Noach, do we? He shall comfort. Comfort. He shall comfort. Now, that doesn't sound a whole exciting, because what do you think about when you think of Noah? Say again, Mark. Death. You think of the destruction of the entire world. But the reality is, when we look back at Noah, what do we see? The deliverance of mankind. It wasn't judgment. Judgment came, okay? Methuselah. Does anybody know what Methuselah means? Yeah, when he dies, it shall come. Okay? And so, there's a point. How about David? Daid. Say it again. Beloved. Well, not of God, but just beloved. But he was who? The beloved of God. Okay? Does that make sense? So there's a reason. So even, and I don't have time to go through them all, but Zechariah, Isaiah, they all, their names were all meaningful to what went on in their life. Okay? There is, a name is extremely important in the Jewish mind. Okay? And so you need to understand that. Then coming into this passage, this isn't just a whim. This isn't just a woohoo. It doesn't really matter what this means. This is very important. Okay? That God is choosing to say something specifically through, by giving us his names. He doesn't have to. He just could just say what he's going to say. A child's going to be born. The importance of the name. I say the name because now I'm talking about whose name? Yahweh, God's name himself, okay? And so we read that Yahweh, and we'll talk about this at the end of December, okay? The last message when we talk about his name shall be called. We're going to get to Yahweh, okay? But this is important because this is all based upon this whole concept. Yahweh is, okay? And so Yahweh's name is intricately interwoven with his glory. Isaiah 42:8. I am Yahweh, that is my name, and my glory I will not give to another. What's he saying? He's not going to give his what? His name. He's not going to give his glory, and his name is intricately woven to his glory. I'm not going to give my glory to another, nor my praise to carven images. Again, he says in Isaiah 48, verse 11, for my own sake, I will do it. For how should my name be profaned, and I will not give my glory to another? Okay? We could go through a lot of passages talking about his name. His name is holy. Understand? So that the name he chose, Yahweh himself, okay, it means the one who exists, and he has chosen that name, and he has chosen to hold himself apart from everything else. He will not share his glory with anyone else, okay, which is very important as we get into this. So the importance then of these names. There are four doublets, okay, so if, like in the New King James, it says wonderful, comma, counselor, comma. That's wrong. There's four doublets. It's a literary device happening here. And there are four doublets. It's the Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Now, those don't sound like doublets because that's English. It's Peleuites, Eldegabor, I'm messing up, Aviad, and Sar Shalom. Okay? And so there are four two-word Hebrew words coming together, describing who this child was going to be, and they're given then as names. His name shall be called, okay? When did you ever hear Jesus being called these? We really didn't. Does that make sense? And so, anybody having their family a Bubba? A Bubba. Well, did your mom and dad call him Bubba, or was that his, what everybody called him? This is what everybody called him. It wasn't really his name. But why do they call him Bubba? What does Bubba actually mean? Brother. It means brother. Yeah. See, it's funny because down south, Bubba just means Bubba, buddy. I mean, it's just Bubba. Anyways, but it derived from the word for brother. It was just the childish thing of saying brother. But anyways, different hillbilly. That's right. And so you got this concept then that this is what he's going to be called. This is his name. His name shall be, okay? So there's four doublets. And what's important is these names are given as a descriptor of the sign that Yahweh, promise to the house of David in chapter 7. Anybody know what I'm referring to? What promise in chapter 7 that he gave him? So Isaiah chapter 7, you know it. Think about it. No, that's Isaiah 9:6. That's what we're teaching on right now. What's chapter 7? To the house of David. That's the key there. He promised to the house of David. Verse 14. Does that help you out? Isaiah 7:14. Say it again, Phyllis. Say it louder. So, God through Isaiah says to the house of Ahaz, he says, ask for a sign. Just, I'll deliver you. Don't worry about Rezin. Don't worry about the son of Remaliah. I'm the one. I'll deliver you. And so just ask for a sign. Doesn't matter. I mean, think about it. God never told anybody to just ask for a sign, you know, other than Hezekiah, right? And so, but Ahaz comes back and says what? Oh, no, far be it from me to ask for a sign. Oh, I can't. This little self-righteous little thing. But he wasn't. It wasn't like he was a God-fearer. He was mocking God. And God knew it. And God came back. Yahweh came back and says, fine, I will then give you a sign. This is a sign to the house of David, not to Ahaz, right? And he comes back and he gives him this sign. He says that the virgin shall conceive and bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Emmanuel. We know, and we'll talk about this four more weeks from now, okay, that, or actually, this is Christmas Eve message, okay, that Emmanuel is God with us. So he's going to give this name, God with us. And so this is 7 to 9 is all in the same passage, all in the same context, okay? And so we go into chapter 8 and we talk about that Assyria is going to overflow the banks and all this kind of stuff and all this is going on. And so that at the end of this whole prophecy, the end of this whole interaction, God uses Isaiah to give another prophecy regarding this child, okay? And so he amplifies this promise. But they're also given as a precursor to the promise that Yahweh gave in chapter 48 and through the prophet Zechariah, which we've already talked about over the past couple weeks. Anybody remember the promise that was in Isaiah 48 and also was given multiple times in Zechariah? What did Yahweh promise? You know it. Think about what we're talking about here. What have we just said? Emmanuel. God what? God with us. So what did he promise in Isaiah 48, verse 17, I think. It might be 16. And in Zechariah chapter 2, in Zechariah chapter 12, Zechariah chapter 14. Say again? He's going to come. God is going to literally be with us. Yahweh is going to come incarnate and dwell with us. And so in Isaiah 48, Yahweh declares, and now Yahweh Elohim in his Ruach have sent me. In Zechariah chapter 2 and Zechariah chapter 4, Yahweh says that he's going to come and he's going to dwell in the midst. In Zechariah chapter 12, Yahweh says they will look upon me whom they have pierced. In Zechariah chapter 14, he says he's going to come and he's going to rule the nations and he's going to destroy the nations. It's an amazing thing. So all of these names are extremely important because what God is, again, is not a mystery. Meekness and majesty, you know. Manhood and deity. But it really shouldn't have been a mystery. Because God was being very clear. I don't know how you can get into these passages and just not see it, unless you just don't want to. So, as we come into this passage, first we're going to do some observations, okay? Now, this is really going to be purely a word study, okay? Because all I want you to do is be overwhelmed with what God has promised. If that makes sense. So we'll do some applications coming out of it. But there's going to be just these observations, okay? And first of all, we have this first doublet, Peleuites, okay? Literally, it means the giver of wonderful counsel, okay? And so we'll talk about those words in a second. First, we want to talk about them being used together, okay? And so we're going to have our fingers do the walking in just a moment, but these first ones, we'll have them up on the screen. Isaiah 28, verse 29. This also comes from Yahweh Sabaoth, who was wonderful in counsel and excellent in guidance. In Isaiah 25, verse 1, O Yahweh, you are my God. I will exalt you. I will praise your name, for you have done wonderful things. Your counsels of old are faithfulness and true. These are the only two passages where these two words are used together again, okay? And so you see the word itzah, itzah, yoitz, in Hebrew it's from the same word, okay? And so you have the pele itzah and the pele itzah, okay? And so note in verse 28 verse 29 and 25 verse 1, who is wonderful in counsel? Yahweh. Is there anybody else there? There's nobody else there. In fact, in Isaiah 25, verse 1, note things in your. What do you note about the word things in your? They're not there in the Hebrew. They're italicized, okay? So if you get rid of them, he's talking about, again, Yahweh, you have done wonderful counsels, okay? You have given wonderful counsel, okay? Your wonderful counsels of old are faithful and true, okay? And so together, the only time they're used is to describe Yahweh himself. What about used individually? The word pele literally means to be difficult, wondrous, marvelous, or miraculous. Okay? It's just like, woo! Okay? It's just out there. So, isn't there where we want to go to the Bible? So, I want people to read. Okay? We got a lot of passages, so there's a lot of people, so we can all read. Okay? So, grab your Bible. So, we're going to start passing them out. Exodus 15, verse 11. Who's going to read it? All right, Caleb, when you read it, you got to read it aloud. Psalm 77, verse 11 to 14. Who's going to read it? Okay, Richard. Okay. Psalm 78, 10 to 12. Gerard, I saw your hand go before. Psalm 88, 10 to 12. Chuck? Okay. Did you hang on? Okay, Zoe, you get the next one. Psalm 89, verse 5. Okay. Somebody else? Phyllis, Psalm 119, verse 129. Okay. Anna, you got Isaiah 29. Verse 13 to 14. Didn't you put your hand up? Oh, so you went like that. So you put your hand up. I saw the hand. Okay, you got it. One of you read it. Okay. Okay, somebody else? All right. Did I give you one, Steve? No. Lamentations 1:8-9. That's right. It was Caleb. Same row. Okay. And then Mark, did your hand go up? Okay. Daniel 12, verse 6. All right. So they're in order on your sermon note sheet, I think. Okay. So... Caleb, roll up.
Exodus 15:11. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders?
Okay, Psalm 77.
I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. I will ponder all your word and meditate on your mighty deeds. Your way, O God, is holy. Your God is great like our God. You're the God who works wonders. You have made
Psalm 78.
They did not keep the covenant of God. They refused to walk in his law and forgot his works and his wonders that he had shown them. Marvelous things he did in their sight, in the sight of their fathers, in the land of Egypt, in the field of Zoan.
Psalm 88.
Will you work wonders for the dead? Shall the dead arise and praise you? Selah. Shall your loving kindness be declared in the grave, or your faithfulness in the place of destruction? Shall your wonders be known in the dark, and your righteousness in the land of forgetfulness?
Psalm 89.
Let the heavens praise your wonders, O Lord, your faithfulness in the assembly of the holy.
Psalm 119, 129.
Your testimonies are wonderful, therefore my soul keeps them.
Isaiah 29, 13 and 14.
Therefore the Lord said, inasmuch as these people draw near with their mouths and honor me with their lips, but have removed their hearts far from me, and their fear towards me is taught by the commandment of men. Therefore, behold, I will again do a marvelous work among this people, a marvelous work and a wonder, for the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hidden.
I'm going to hold off on Lamentations, Steve. Okay, we'll come right back to you. Daniel 12, verse 6.
One said to the man dressed in linen, who was above the
water. Oh, wait, hey, can you do me a favor? My bad. Can you do 4 to 6? Thank you.
But as for you, Daniel, conceal these words and seal up the book until the end of time. Many will go back and forth, and knowledge will increase. Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others were standing, one on this bank of the river and the other on that bank of the river. One said to the man dressed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, how long will it be until the end of these wonders?
Okay, so hold your places, y'all. So, Caleb. Who was doing the wonders in Exodus 15?
The Lord.
The Lord. Psalm 77, who was doing the wonders, Richard?
The Lord.
The Lord. Psalm 78, who was doing the wonders? Yahweh. Okay, Psalm 88, who is doing the wonders?
Yahweh.
Yahweh. How about Psalm 89?
Yahweh.
Yahweh. How about Psalm 119, Phyllis? Yeah, Yahweh's testimonies are wonderful. Okay, Isaiah 29?
The Lord.
The Lord. Daniel 12? It's hard to say there, huh?
Yeah.
Because you got to go back in context. And so...
So clearly God is talking to Daniel.
Good. That's right. So the wonders that are being talked about are that big prophecy of the end times of the king of the north and the king of the south. And so all these wonders, wondrous things, okay? So the Lord. Do you get it? This is... And we're going to come to Lamentations in a second. What you've just read, what we just heard, is every place where this word is used. Do you get it? Every place there's something miraculous or wondrous that happens, it's used in connection to who? Yahweh. Do you get it? Okay, now Lamentations, though, okay, that's still one of the words. So I want you to listen to this one because, again, it's important to listen. So Lamentations verses chapter 1, verse 8 to 9. So which word do you think it is that's our word here? Awesome. Her collapse is awesome. So now you have to ask yourself, well, does this word apply to Yahweh or not?
Yahweh made it.
Ah, that's exactly right. Yahweh made it. Her collapse. And so if you read prophecy, as we've been going through Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Lamentations and all that, right? The reality is, who is the one who brought Israel's collapse upon them? Yahweh. Yahweh. And so her collapse was so miraculous, think about this, so wondrous, that all the nations around about said what? This is amazing. Wow, this is amazing, okay? And so this concept of this word Pele, Pala, is that people say, wow, wow, this is amazing. In other words, if it wasn't miraculous, if it wasn't really such a wonderful thing, it wouldn't be what? Pele. Do you get it? And so Andrew thinks it's a wonderful name for Pele. Because when he... Do you guys know who Pele is? The soccer player. Okay? That's why they call him Pele. That's exactly right. Okay, good. Because he was so wonderful. He did things with a soccer ball that nobody could do. Anyways, and so, but the idea is this whole concept, okay, if that that... Only Yahweh is Pele, okay? And so we have each of these passages, which we just looked at. And then Itzah, Yoitz, is the counselor or an advisor. Now, this is just a generic term, okay? So, for example, Ahithophel, anybody know who Ahithophel was? David's grandfather, who was? Yeah, you're giving me those details. Yeah, it was Bathsheba's father, or we believe it's Bathsheba's father, okay? But who was he to David, other than father-in-law and all that kind of stuff?
He was his counselor.
He was his counselor, his advisor. He was a yoitz for David, okay? So he was an advisor. He was one who gave counsel and advice. And so we read in Proverbs that in the presence of many what? Counselors, there is wisdom, okay? Now, we're assuming that those counselors are giving you wise counsel, okay? Because you could be in a bunch of fools, and the counsel wouldn't be very wise, okay? Psalm 33, verse 10 to 11. Somebody want to read that? Who said that? Brian? Okay, while he's getting that, who wants to take Isaiah 14, 24 to 27? Brazos, is your head going up? Okay. That was, you were in the middle of bids. When you give bids,
right.
You were bidding with your head. Yeah. Isaiah 14, 24 to 27. Auction, that's what it was. Isaiah 40, 13 to 15. Last one. All right, we're going to go with Ace. Okay, so we have a new reader. All right. So, Brian, Psalm 33, 10 to 11. We're going to, so don't lose it when you're done because we're going to come back to it, okay? Yes, please.
brings the counsel of the nations to nothing.
Oh, I tell you what. Context. Sorry. Start at verse 6.
Okay. 6. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth. He gathers the waters of the sea together as a heap. He lays up the deep in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. The Lord brings the counsel of the nations to nothing. He makes the plans of the peoples of no effect. The counsel of the Lord stands forever. The plans of his heart to all generations.
Okay, so by the word of Yahweh, everything was what? Everything was made, okay? And that he brings the counsel of the nations to nothing, but his counsel is going to what? Stand forever. Okay, we'll come back to that. Okay, Isaiah 14, 24 to 27.
The Lord of hosts has sworn, saying, surely just as I have intended, so it has happened, and just as I have planned, so it will stand. And break Assyria in my land, and I will trample him on my mountains. Then his yoke will be removed from them, and his burden removed from their shoulders. This is the plan devised against the whole earth, and this is the hand that is stretched out against all the nations. For the Lord of hosts has planned, and who can frustrate it? And as for his outstretched hand, who can turn it back?
So this is kind of cool. So four times in your passage, we get it. Three times, I think yours put it as planned, and then one as devised. And so in the King James, it has it as purposed. And so it's purposed, 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 purposed. And so the idea is that it's counsel. So if you put the word counseled in there, okay, that's his advice, that's his counsel. But when God gives counsel, it's going to happen. Does it make sense? Okay, that's his plan. Isaiah 40, verse 13 to 15. Okay, so we, hopefully this rings a bell with you, okay? Read that first verse again, Ace.
Who has measured the Spirit of the Lord, or what man shows him his counsel?
Okay, does that sound familiar? It's a little bit different in the ESV. You're reading ESV, right? Yeah. Who has been what? Who has given the Lord what? Counsel. Romans chapter 11. We're going to go there in a moment, okay? This is where it comes from, okay? And so the idea... Who has directed the Spirit of the Lord? Who has been his counselor? Okay, with whom did he take counsel? The idea is that God doesn't take counsel from anybody. You remember Job? Okay, we're going to go there, but there were so many passages I didn't want to go to everything, right? And so Job, through the whole book, I mean, we see that Job is righteous. I mean, he gives God glory. He worships God even when he loses everything, right? But through the opportunities that he has relating to his wife, and nothing personal, and his friends, quote unquote, what happens? What do we find out in Job? He struggles with what? Be honest. Pride, okay? That's you and I, okay, as well, okay? He's struggling with pride, and he wants to what? Say it again, Chuck. He wants to advise God, you know? He wants this conversation with God. He wants God to do this thing face to face. Let's do it, God, you know, and let's talk about this thing. I mean, if you're so righteous and holy and just and everything, let me present my case. So God, what? He answers his prayer request, doesn't he? And instantly, Job says what? Oops. I despise myself, right? And so he talks about that. He was seeking to give counsel to God of things that were too wonderful. It's a variation of our word that we're looking at. Of things that were too wonderful for him. They were beyond his comprehension. And yet, as a mere man, he got full of himself. He was frustrated in his moment. And he thought that he could give God counsel. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Do you ever suffer with that? Do you ever struggle with that one? I mean, I struggle with that in prayer. I mean, I kind of chuckle sometimes when I'm praying, you know? And again, if you've never seen Fiddler on the Roof, you need to watch Fiddler on the Roof. But one of my favorite parts is when Tavia, his horse is lame, you know, and he's talking, and he always talks, it's just conversation with God, a relational conversation with God. and he's talking to God about his horse being lame, and he says, "Isn't it a good book it says?" And he says, "Why should I tell you what the good book says?" Anyways, but the whole idea is, I can't give God what? Counsel. Here I am. I like to talk about what the good book says to everybody else because I'm trying to use it as counsel. He doesn't really use the good book properly. Anyways, but still, he goes to use it to God, and he realizes what? He's telling the author. Yeah, I mean, who am I to speak to the God of the universe and tell him what he needs to do? Does that make sense? And so a lot of times my prayer, I mean, I feel that way. I feel like here I am, I'm praying, and I'm going to tell God what he needs to do. He knows me better than I know myself, who has been his counselor. And so we get into the application phase of this passage. And we talk about his sovereignty. So in Psalm 33, Brian, we saw that God does what? Just those two verses, verse 10 and 11. He does what? Yes, that's it.
He has the plan and then his counsel.
But he brings the counsel of the nations to nothing, right? But his counsels will stand, okay? And so his counsels are those which are going to stand. So the nations can plot. And so in Psalm 2, the second psalm, we read, why do the heathen rage and the people plot a vain thing, right? And so they're plotting against God. And so it's kind of hard for us to comprehend this. But in our world today, do you look out there sometimes and you kind of wonder what's going on? There's a spiritual war that's going on. And I don't know whether certain individuals really realize and really have a thought process of what they're doing, or whether they're just pawns. But there's a war that's going on. And so when Daniel 12, when I asked Mark about who was doing the wonders, and we have to go back into the previous prophecies to look at that. And as Daniel was praying, God was sending him the answer, right? And so as the angel came to give him the answer, what happened? He was withstood by the prince of Persia. Okay, now we're not told necessarily that it was Satan, but the prince of Persia. But we're told that there was a spiritual battle going on, and that a messenger from God was coming to Daniel, a man of God, and somebody withstood him. Now, I don't think that was another angel from God. Doesn't make sense to me, right? So it was a spiritual being in the spiritual realm, a fallen angel, if you would, okay, who was called the Prince of Persia. That's a very physical term, isn't it? And so who were the Persians? In according with where Daniel was at that moment. They were in power. Okay. They were the rulers of the world. So behind the scenes, think about this. Behind the scenes, there was a prince of Persia. Bless you. There was a prince of Persia. Okay. And so then Michael came to the aid so that this messenger could leave and come deliver the message to Daniel. There was a war that was going on. Okay, there was someone, some being, something going on that was seeking to thwart what? God's plan, the counsel of God. Does it make sense? But God's plan, God's counsel can't be thwarted. The people today, there are people today being used of Satan in whatever realm, in that behind the scenes there's a spiritual realm going on. And they are seeking to thwart the plan of God. Whether they know it or not, they're being used. There are people who want to destroy Israel still. Why? To thwart the plan of God. It has nothing to do with Israel. It has nothing to do with Israel. They're nothings. They're nothings. It all has to do with the plan of God. So man continues to seek to thwart the plan of God, but they cannot, because God will bring the counsel of the nations to nothing. Do you believe it? As you look into the world, do you believe it? As you go to vote a year from now, will you believe it? Do you get it? I mean, we put so much stock in what we see in the physical realm, but God's plans will not be thwarted. Jesus is coming back. That is what he's declared. Just as all the other counsels of God have come to pass, so will the future counsels of God come to pass. You can take it to the bank. Secondly, salvation. Isaiah 9, if you're still there in 9, we already read this, but verse 1 and 2, nevertheless, the gloom will not be upon her who is distressed as when at first he lightly esteemed the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward more heavily oppressed her by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan in the Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. In Isaiah 42, verse 5 and 6, we read, thus says God Yahweh, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread forth the earth and that which comes from it, who gives breath, ruach, to the people on it, and spirit, or that was actually neshama, and spirit, ruach, to those who walk on it. I, Yahweh, have called you in righteousness and will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the Gentiles. God had a plan, a counsel. And we read about this counsel. It's a marvelous thing. His counsel was that his plan was in salvation that he was going to once again deliver his people Israel, and that through that deliverance, when he sent the deliverer, he was going to open up deliverance to the Gentiles. And he would accomplish that. He would do that by he himself being incarnate and coming to the earth. And so we read in Romans chapter 1, I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Gentile or the Greek. In Romans chapter 11, verses 28 to 36, it actually goes from chapter 9 all the way to chapter 11. And you go through it. In chapter 9, he goes back to the statement from Malachi where he says, Jacob I loved and Esau I hated. And Israel loved that passage because what? They're the ones who are Jacob, they were the beloved. But now God was informing them that he was going to be setting them aside to open up the gospel to the Gentiles, just as he had given counsel ahead of time. Do you get it? Just as he had. So in this whole thing with the unto us a son is given, unto us a child is born, his name shall be called, and of the increase of his government there shall be no end. All that was tied together with the fact that there was going to be a light given to the Gentiles. And so it wasn't a mystery. It wasn't something God had hidden. It was there for them to read plainly. But Israel didn't want to share. Do we live like that? Like we're not wanting to share? So I've had all 5 grandkids in the house last night at one time. Yeah. It's fun. It's fun. But it's fun to watch. Now, the 2 babies, they're not going at each other just yet, right? But it's fun to watch the older ones struggle with the what? It's mine. It's mine. Mine, mine. It's not really yours. It's actually grandma and grandpa's. It's at their house. But I was the first one who what? Touched it. I grabbed it first, you know? And so it's mine. It's mine. It's mine. Mine. And it's so fun. You're not willing to what? What about you want to teach them? You need to what? Share. So what about your salvation? What about your salvation? Huh? There's plenty to go around, but we act like it's the last piece of pizza on the plate, don't we? But isn't God the one who multiplied the pizza by the seashores? I know, it's really bread. I know, I get it. Bread and fish. But you get the analogy, right? The point is that there is plenty to go around, but we don't want to share. He's got this plan of salvation. Supplication. This is exciting for me. Somebody read Isaiah 55, verse 8 and 9. You could probably quote it if you knew where it was, what it was. And then somebody, who's going to take that? Isaiah 55. You got it? Okay. Who's going to take Ephesians 3, verse 20 and 21? Okay. Gerald. Okay. And I saw Jonah, your hand. So you get Genesis 18, 14. And then somebody take Jeremiah. All right, Zoe. Jeremiah 32, 37. Okay? So Isaiah 55, 8 to 9.
For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways,
my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts.
Okay. Ephesians 3, verse 20 and 21. Amen. So his thoughts are above our thoughts, his ways beyond our comprehension, right? Because it's he who is able to do what, Gerald?
Exceedingly abundantly above.
He's not even just to be able to do abundantly above. He's not just able, or we'll start it. He's not even just to be able to do above what we think. He's not even able to do abundantly above what we think. He's able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that you could ever ask or think. If you think it, it has nothing. So this morning in Sunday school, we did the Valley of Dry Bones. He shows Ezekiel a valley full of dry bones. Dry, picked over bones. I had a picture up there. And I shared that, you know, I can't imagine if I was shown this valley and God said to me, can these bones live? What my answer would have been. I mean, I can't do it. I don't know a man on the earth that can do it. But God, you alone, what? Can do it. And so he says, you tell me, God. I mean, what else? Other answer. Because that's it. God is the only one who's able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we could ever ask or think. And that is beyond what I could even ask or think. To see a bunch of skeletons all pulled apart, just laying there. I wouldn't even know. So you sent, or maybe it was Abby texted Marsha or whatever and said that what was broke? The humerus? I thought it was just a bunch of joke was being played because it was a bunch of humor. Anyways, Anyways, I haven't got a clue. So what got broke? Help me out. What just got broke? Then the next text says about his upper arm. Ah, that helps me out. Okay, his upper arm. I haven't got a clue. I see a bunch of what? Bones. Dude, if I put it together, it would look bad. Then if I was able to put sinews on it, right? But for God, isn't it? Think about it. He knew exactly which bones went together, where they went together, how they went together. And when he started to make the sinews and he put the sinews on it, it's exactly right. Why? Because he's the designer. It's like bringing in the original designer back and say, oh, can you like redo this again? How did he do it originally? He spoke it. Well, he formed. Now, we're told, no, he formed man out of the dust of the ground. This is kind of cool. He formed man from the dust of the ground. He did it in such a way. It was marvelous. He actually was like a potter. And then he what? He puffed into him, resuscitated him, because he couldn't be resuscitated because he had never been, so he resuscitated him, and he brought him to life. How cool is that? And that's what God's saying through all that. And he's saying, look, what you see is impossible. Genesis 18, verse 14. Who has that?
Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you, according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son.
So what was going on there, Jonah? That was when Yahweh and the two angels came and they spoke to Abraham, right? Sarah would have a son. How old was Sarah? No. That was when God called Abraham when he was 75. So 89 probably. Because she gave birth to Isaac when she was 90. So theoretically, we'll let her be 89 when she gets, she's just a spring chicken, you know, at 89. But Abraham and Sarah thought this was what? It was crazy. In fact, Sarah, what? She laughs. That's why she calls him Isaac, right? Calls him laughter, right? I mean, this is like, this is nuts. How can this be? Jeremiah 32, 37. Say it again. Read it again. Sorry.
Behold, I will gather them from all countries to which I drove them in my anger and my wrath and in great indignation.
Okay. So, I gave you a wrong reference. Jeremiah 32:27. Ah, I put 37 on there. Yeah, 27. Twice in God's word, Yahweh declares to his people, is there anything what? Too hard for me. So, his wonderful counsel is available to all those who believe. You just have to what? Believe. Ask and it shall be given to you. Knock and the door shall be opened up. If you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, be moved and cast into the sea, and what? It'll be done for you. So, who is Jesus to you? We're going to go into this part. We're looking at the birth of Jesus as we consider this. Is he the wonderful counselor? Is Jesus the wonderful counselor? I mean, this is an amazing thing to me. This baby that's going to be born is God in the flesh. Is there then a need to change the way you think and therefore change the way you act? As we head into communion, one of the things to consider is, again, continuing this thought process of him being the wonderful counselor of redemption and salvation. And we read, I want to read two passages here, Acts 2, and then we're going to sing some songs and have personal reflection. In Acts 2, verse 22, we read, men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested to you by God, to you, by miracles, wonders, and signs, that's the what? Wonderful things, which God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves know, him being delivered by the determined purpose, counsel, that's our word counsel, in foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands and have crucified and put to death, whom God raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be held by it. And then chapter 4, verses 24 to 28. So when they heard that, they raised their voice to God. This is they heard about what God did through the apostles. When they heard that, they raised their voice to God with one accord and said, Lord, you are God who made heaven and earth and the sea and all that is in them, who by the mouth of your servant David said, why did the nations rage and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth took their stand and the rulers were gathered together against Yahweh and his Christ. For truly against your holy servant Jesus, whom you anointed, both Herod and Pontius with the Gentiles and the people of Israel were gathered together to do whatever your hand and your counsel determined before to be done. It was God's determined counsel, plan, that Jesus would come. It was his wonderful counsel. And I need to train myself that I want to do this as we go in through the message. But lighting the candle, maybe, is a reminder of us to who Jesus really is. He is the wonderful counselor. He is the one who spoke, and it was. He is the one who came into the world, who became flesh, and we beheld his glory. He is the one who, becoming flesh, then offered himself as a living sacrifice. He is the one who raised himself up from the dead. He is that one.